Hey everyone, welcome to the Fieldhouse at Winter Park. Mike Wapshaw joined by our friend Tom Pelissero of NFL Media. Now, Tom, we've covered like every angle of the Case Keenum to Stephon Diggs play, the Minneapolis Miracle, except for one, and that is how you took it in. I understand it is not exactly how you would draw it up.
Yeah, if you want to talk about every angle, I think I had the worst one, which was that I was on the plane back from the Steelers-Jaguars game, which ended up being the second craziest game of the day, a 45-2 finish, or 45-42, rather. So sitting on the plane, streaming through the Wi-Fi that really you shouldn't be able to stream through, but if you want to try, you can figure it out. 14 seconds left. The feed stops.
Right.
Okay, so 14 seconds being the play before the play. Mm-hmm. Wi-Fi comes back 5 minutes later, and all I got is Twitter notifications coming up saying, wow, Vikings, unbelievable. Nobody tweets details at moments like that. It's just, so I had to start texting people and saying, what happened? Somebody explain to me how it happened. And by the time I got the thing fired up again and watched the play, I watched it again several times just now. It's still absolutely unbelievable.
What stands out to you about the play, though? I mean, seriously, all the things that went into it, you know, a lot had to go on for that to happen. What happened to you? What stands out?
Well, I think the first part is just the throw. I mean, yeah. Keenum had made several throws in that game. People talk a lot about the interception, which was bad. I mean, you get some of that with Case Keenum, but he made a bunch of throws into tight windows in that game to put that ball up. Now, he knows he has to, right? You have to be very aggressive in that situation, but he still sticks that into a pretty fine window there. Obviously, Marcus Williams misplays it badly. It kind of looks to me like he gets caught in between trying to go for the ball and trying to go low and doesn't really know what he's doing. Somehow, he whiffs entirely, and then the presence of mind and the body control of Stephon Diggs to not just catch the football. You're being told, I'm sure, before the play, catch it and get out of bounds, but somehow spins, notices there's nobody in front of him, and manages to keep his feet in and get into the end zone. You know, as somebody who has followed and covered the Vikings for a long time, to have a play like that, especially with the back and forth of the two field goals and everything else, to have a play like that actually go in the Vikings' favor is certainly something that a lot of people have not experienced before.
That's right, yourself included, having grown up here, you know. Your colleagues at NFL Media, Alex Flanagan and Stacey Dales, you were in Pittsburgh, Jacksonville doing what they did here after that game and the chaos that's on the field. What's going through your mind when you're Stacey Dales or Alex Flanagan and you got to cover that?
Well, they went through it, not me. I was busy dealing with something completely different out there in Pittsburgh. But I think that, you know, you're trying to put together the pieces of exactly what happened there. And more than anything, you're probably thinking, okay, who can I actually get? Because we plan a lot of those post-game interviews, right? Yeah. You kind of let people know with 2-3 minutes to go, here's the direction, here's what we think. Well, when you have multiple lead changes, you know, you have a field goal for each team and then the final score all in the final 2 minutes, it's total and complete chaos.
Right.
But that's also part of what makes it fun. I mean, if you wanted to cover something that you could predict, you wouldn't cover sports for a living. That's part of why we do this.
That's exactly right. All right, so let's turn our attention to Philadelphia. So you look at the conference championship games in the AFC and the NFC, and people will mention the quarterbacks. You got Nick Foles and Blake Bortles, and then you have Tom Brady. So, and Case Keenum, and people are like, I can't believe these quarterbacks who are in the title game, and they're kind of referring to, like, Bortles and Keenum and Foles. But where, honestly, where do you put Case Keenum on that spectrum of quarterbacks? Is he a guy, I mean, because Case Keenum has got a pretty good body of work this season. So I know he's not Tom Brady, but he's also not, you know, an unbelievable story, a miraculous story that he got the team here. So how do you assess Case Keenum?
Well, you got a longer track record on him this season, certainly, than you do on Nick Foles. Nick Foles has started a lot of games in the league, but you're really seeing the Eagles continue to go through the evolution process of figuring out what they're trying to be as an offense with him. With Keenum, I think that the Vikings had to do that, and credit to Pat Shurmur. That's part of the reason that he's a strong head coaching candidate, is the way that he's been able to adapt to his personnel through the course of the season, keep calling plays to keep people off balance, continue to utilize his playmakers. Keenum, you get the good and the bad. We've talked about this several times this season, is he's going to uncork some of those throws to leave you scratching your head, but he's also going to uncork some of those throws that a lot of guys wouldn't be willing to make. Absolutely, he's played well. He's helped them get to this point. With Blake Bortles, it's a similar setup in terms of it's a very defense-driven team. It is a running game-driven team. I think that everybody, no matter who your quarterback is, you're trying to figure out, how do you maximize what they can do? How do you play to your identity? With Jacksonville and watching that game, I thought the Jaguars did an excellent job of it. They more or less were going to run the ball on first and second down, keep him in third and medium, and then let him throw the ball inside, where Bortles is a fairly accurate quarterback. Staying on schedule is a big part in the NFL. You know, with Keenum and the Vikings, they've done a decent job of that at times. There have been other times they've been backed up and somehow on third and longer, He's making the throw, too. It's a different year. There is absolutely no question about it, but I think that it shows that a big part of coaching is adjustments in the NFL, not just within the game and strategically, but also in terms of your personnel. How do you continue to utilize those guys? And the teams that have done it well enough are the ones that are here.
I think you look at the Vikings and Eagles and two really good defenses. I mean, the Eagles are number one in the NFL in run defense. The Vikings are number one scoring yards and third downs. Are you anticipating the predictable, the slugfest, points are at a premium, every possession matters style of game on Sunday?
I would have thought that's what the Jaguars wanted last weekend, and we ended up with 45-42.
Sure.
I mean, strange things happen. Turnovers are a huge part. I think that the turnover battle you have to look at as being a huge factor in this game. Go back to the game the Vikings played last season. It's a different Eagles team, different Vikings team, but they scored 10 points in that game. Last week, the Eagles gave up 10 points to a really good Falcons team. There's no question the strength of Philadelphia's team is the front seven. It's that defensive front. Vikings are having to shuffle some things along the offensive line since they had an injury. Mike Remmer's playing guard now, Rashad Hill playing tackle. From everything that I've seen and heard, Remmer's played pretty well, having to move into a different position for him this past week. But now you're going up against Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham and everybody else. So controlling those guys, making sure that the pressure doesn't become a big part of it, you would certainly think that that's a big thing for the Vikings. And on the flip side, getting after Nick Foles is going to be a huge part of this game as well. The thing the Eagles did, if you watched the game last week, was they got the ball out of his hand. They found a way to get him in rhythm. I felt like I was watching the Chip Kelly offense that Foles thrived in about 4 years ago, in terms of it was all just, you know, smoke and mirrors, right? Pulling handoffs, throwing quick slants, just getting that rhythm down. He wasn't pushing the ball down the field a ton. He was efficient. They moved the football when they needed to and score a ton of points. Well, they scored 15 points in the game. It's not as if this was, you know, a shootout type of a game, but they did enough to back up their defense. And if you're looking across the remaining playoff teams outside of New England, the number one scoring offense in the league, I believe, you've got a lot of teams that are kind of operating a similar way, playing to their defense and hoping that the offense can play the possession game and do enough.
Last question, as someone who's familiar with this area and this community, but someone who's got their eye on the national landscape, how do you describe, you know, Vikings fans and Vikings Nation in this moment right now going up to the title game? How would you describe it to someone who is not familiar with Minnesota the way you are?
Well, I would say the best example, and I've gotten a lot of emails and texts from different people. I told the one on NFL Network yesterday about a friend emailed and said, I've cried tears of joy twice in my life. 1986 when E.T. came back to life, and 2018 when Diggs was at about the 20-yard line. I also got, you know, text messages from my father, who's a lifelong Vikings fan. He's gone through all 57 years here, and it's the only time in my entire life, including 2009, including, you know, back in 1998, I can ever remember him, after a big win, not saying they're going to mess this up. Right. That something's going to go wrong, right? That's the Vikings' entire history. They haven't been perennial losers like the Browns or the Lions. They've been a team that's been close so many different times, going all the way back to the four Super Bowls, and just haven't been able to finish it. But when you have a play like the one that Diggs made last week, you just look at it and you say, this feels a little bit different. It might just mean that this is going to be the most painful finish of all time, but there's also something about this team that everything they've gone through, going back to losing Bradford after week one, losing Dalvin Cook after week four, they've continued to build through it and push through everything. It really is. It's a credit to Mike Zimmer. It's a credit to Rick Spielman and the personnel department here for putting the pieces in place. And it's a credit to the players that no matter what kind of adversity they've had to face, they've stayed on track, and here they are, one step from the Super Bowl.
If the folks watching, listening right now are going to keep one eye on Vikings.com, but one eye on NFL Network, what are they going to hear from you, and when are you going to be on?
Well, we're going to be doing a lot here this week, actually. I'll be around Minneapolis the entire week. I'll be fronting our coverage here on Championship Wednesday tomorrow. I'll be somewhere. I don't even know where yet, but we'll be several mystery locations on Sunday to actually capture what Vikings fans are going through, win or lose, on Sunday in this championship game, so that should be entertaining too.
The good news is you won't be on a plane.
there's
so you'll be able to know what happened.
Just hopefully whatever bar or house or party or whatever I'm at on Sunday doesn't have the feed go out with a minute to go.
I hope it doesn't happen. Thanks for your time, man.
Thanks, Bobby. Yep.